When Jen Mann began writing her blog called People I Want to Punch in the Throat, she had no idea that it would replace what she calls her humble brag Christmas letter, much less become a book.
I'd had kids in 04 and 06, and those were the last time I wrote my humble brag Christmas letter where you tell everybody what's going on in your life. And I'd said we had a baby and we did this and we did that. And then I got bogged down with motherhood and keeping up with everything, and I didn't write another Christmas letter. Then December 2011, I was like, well, I didn't have a baby, but I did start this blog and it feels like a baby. It takes a lot of my time and I worry about it and I care for it.
And now Random House has published two books from Jen Mann's blogs and essays. Discover how this self-published author got picked up by a major publisher and hear her read from her book, Spending the Holidays with People I Want to Punch in the Throat, today on New Letters on the Air, a production of New Letters Magazine at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. I'm Angela Elam. When Jen Mann was studying creative writing at the small liberal arts school in Iowa called Graceland University, she never envisioned how her writing career would begin. She's a child of the Midwest, stretching all the way up into her mother's Canadian farm country, though she has lived and worked in other places, such as New York City, her husband's stomping grounds. Now they're both ensconced with their two children in suburban Overland Park, Kansas, part of the Kansas City Metro, and her life, past and present, has become fodder for her stories that she initially published on the internet and can now be found between the covers of two books. Here's Jen Mann to tell you more about her evolution as a writer.
I started blogging in April of 2011, and I called the People I Want to Punch in the Throat, and it was a humor blog. I work from home with my husband, and we're the only coworkers each of us have, and he was getting really sick of listening to me complain.
And this was in real estate, right?
Right, we're realtors.
Are you still realtors?
I'm still a licensed real estate
agent,
so I still sell real estate. He sells full time. And, you know, he was just kind of tired of listening to me complain all the time. I'm a bit of a complainer. And so he suggested I start a blog. I have a degree in creative writing that I had never used up until that point, really, creatively. I've written a lot of manuals and things like that.
Yeah, I read that your first job out of college was to proof engineering publications.
I did. Yeah, I was a technical proofreader. It's about as exciting as it sounds.
Yeah.
And I know exactly how tall a curb should be and all that good stuff. But it was using my degree.
Right.
I mean, a lot of English majors come out of college and they can't even use their degrees. So my parents were just excited I'd found something I could do with it at least at that point. But
so,
I started blogging, and then in that December, I wrote a blog post about the elf on the shelf. And he's this little doll that you move around. And I realized that there were a lot of people out there who were making their dolls do crazy stuff. Like, I could barely remember to move mine from the top shelf to the bottom shelf. And people were trashing their kitchens, and they were saying the elf did it, and they were switching everybody's closets, you know, during the night, switch kids' clothes from one closet to another. And I was like, I'm too tired for this. And I also didn't like the mischief of it. Like, I'm kind of a strict parent, and I felt like, if I'm telling them this doll is trashing my house, but they can't trash my house. And it's interesting because this year I've seen a lot of backlash with that. I've seen a lot of little kids who are doing stuff and blaming it on the elf. And I'm like, see, I told you that's what – yeah, like, I knew that's what my kids would do. If they were like, oh, the elf can trash the house, we'll just trash it and say the elf did it. So I wrote this post about the elf, and I shared it like I always did. I had 70 readers, and most of them were related to me. And in the next week, sort of – organically, I wish I knew how, otherwise I'd do it every day, but a million people read the post in one day and sort of just catapulted me into this life that I wanted, but I didn't know how to achieve it. And so I started creating social media accounts and Facebook accounts and things like that to sort of capture people. I got a little nervous too, because that was the first time I dealt with internet trolls. You know, up until that point, everybody had been very nice to me. And now suddenly I had these people who hated my guts. And so I went anonymous. I changed my kids' names. I call them Gomer and Adolf. I still use their fake names, and I say their real names are actually worse, and I don't want you to know their names. I took all the pictures of them off my blog, and I kind of hid them because I felt like I had signed up for this, but they had not. They were only 5 and 7 at the time, and I just felt like they don't know what they're getting into. They didn't ask for me to write blogs about them and put their faces on everything. And now that my son's 12, he's like, thank you for not doing, you know, thank you for not putting my, you know, bare butt out there or whatever it is that, you know, all the mom bloggers do. So I gained about 17,000 people that night that started following me. And my husband was like, okay, well,
And you don't name him either.
I don't name him either.
You call him the Hubs.
Yes, he's the Hubs. I don't show pictures of him either. Everyone knows that he's, you know, a cheapo who took me out on our first date with a coupon. And that's about it. So that night, he said, everything I've ever known about you, you've told me you want to write books. You know, here's your chance. Here's your audience. They want to hear from you. And I was so scared. And I thought, I'll never write anything this popular again. And he's like, no, you probably won't. But you don't have to. They just want you to entertain them. Go and entertain them. And I'm going to put the kids to bed and I'm going to go to bed and I look forward to seeing what you write tomorrow morning, you know? And so I stayed up all night and I wrote, and then I started writing 5 times a week on the blog and just keeping them fed and entertained and happy. And then that all led to books. And so
I know. And you started out self-publishing.
I did. My readers were asking for a book and I didn't know quite what to write. And a friend who was a marketing person said, well, if The Elf on the Shelf is your most popular thing and they like your Christmas stories, you should write more Christmas stories and put the elf in a book and just write a whole book about Christmas. And so that's what I did. And so I self-published it first because, you know, it feels like you watch Good Morning America or Today Show every day and they're always talking about the next viral sensation and some mom from nowhere. Nobody called me. Like, nobody even noticed me. And so I knew that I didn't have time to sort of shop it and get it out there in New York. And I knew it would take a long time and I didn't know how long I had. You know, it's like you can be a one-hit wonder too in this world. And I didn't want to kind of waste my opportunity. So I wrote and my husband figured out how to self-publish and he watched YouTube videos and figured out how to do it. And then we just put it up there and we're like, okay, let's see if this works. And that caught the attention of New York finally and then got me a deal with Random House.
And then this book came out before Christmas of 2015.
Right. I sold them 2 books. And so the first book, it's called Peabody Punch in the Throat, Competitive Crafters, Drop Off Despots, and Other Suburban Scourges. And that book actually came out first. And then this book, what we did was, because I was self-publishing and I'd never written a book before, all I knew was that I had a deadline that I had to get it published by. And I didn't know how many words it was or anything. I just hit publish and went with it. And it was only about 30,000 words. And so when Random House took it over, they were like, we're going to need you to expand it and make it longer. And so I added a lot more stories. I doubled the size of it and added a lot more new stories and then kept all the old stories as well.
I'm talking with Jen Mann, who is a big blogger, and it has led to the publication of her book, Spending the Holidays with People I Want to Punch in the Throat. Well, let's give people a sense of what it is you do. I thought I would have you read Wait, Who is the Reason for the Season?
Okay. Our family goes to church every Sunday. Really, we do. The Hubs is the son of a preacher, so every weekend he drags our butts out of bed and makes us go to church. If it were up to me, I would probably read a book and let the kids sleep in most Sundays, but the Hubs won't hear of it. He's single-handedly trying to save our souls. It's probably a good thing. If you've read this far, then you know my soul could use some saving. When the kids were little, I really liked going to church because they would go to the nursery and I'd get an hour to myself. Now that they're older, they go to Sunday school. This is okay, I guess, except for the part where I have to deprogram them. See, I know what I believe, but what I believe isn't the official word that most believe. I'm different from a lot of Christians I'm surrounded by. I'm not a big fire and brimstone type. I'm also the sort of a believer who thinks God loves everyone. Jews, Muslims, little children, gays, douchebags, believers in the theory of evolution, you name it. Sunday school tends to teach my kids stuff like, of course there were dinosaurs on Noah's Ark Adalpha, because the world is only 2,000 years old. Or, yes, Gomer, your friend Ahmed is going to hell. You need to battle him for his eternal soul before it's too late. I've been so busy deprogramming the kids of all this nonsense that I always assumed they were learning the basics, or so I thought. It was the Christmas when Gomer was 8 and Adalpha was 6. The kids and I were decorating their Christmas trees. As I've said before, I'm not really into Christmas decorating, but my mother is, and she's passed that overachieving gene on to my children. Over the years, they've collected ornaments for their trees from the clearance bins after Christmas and my mom's cast-offs, enough that they have their own personal bins full of decorations just for the Christmas trees they put up in their rooms. I was in Adolfa's room helping her hang yet one more pink poodle ornament on her little tree when I heard Gomer yell from his room across the hall, "Mom, can I put out my nativity?" "Yes, go ahead," I replied. Both kids have their own plush nativity sets that they can display in their rooms. They received them when they were babies, and they like to arrange them every year. "Where's mine?" 6-year-old Adolpha asked. "I want to put mine out, too." look in your closet, I said, digging through a box of Eiffel Tower ornaments. What, you don't have an Ooh La La Paris-themed tree in your house? Hey, Mom, Gomer yelled again. I can't find my baby. I couldn't understand what he was talking about. What baby? I called back. I'm helping Adolpha. If you need me, come to her room, please. Gomer stomped into Adolpha's room holding his Joseph and Mary dolls. I said, I can't find my baby. I've only got these guys. These guys are Mary and Joseph. They're kind of important in the nativity, I said. I could hear Adolpha digging in her closet, and each crash of something falling to the floor only made me more exasperated. Okay, whatever. I could only find Mary and Joseph, not the baby. There was another loud crash from Adolpha's closet. I needed to investigate now. It sounded like a whole rack of clothes had fallen down. Well, I don't know what to tell you, Gomer. It was all there last year when we put it away. Go look again. Gomer ran from the room and returned a few seconds later. I've only got the basket. It's empty. I can't find the baby. Gomer showed me his manger. Keep looking, Gomer. It's got to be around somewhere. I left him while I went to check on Adolpha and the mess in her closet. It was as I had suspected. She'd pulled down an entire rack of dresses on herself. I was helping her hang up her clothes when Gomer returned several minutes later. He was victorious. I found him. I found my baby, he shouted. I found my baby Moses. Uh-huh, I mumbled from beneath a pile of Hello Kitty crap. Come on, Moses. Let's get you in your basket, Gomer cooed. Wait. Gomer, I said, finally ignoring Adolphus's mess and giving him my full attention. Who did you say you found? Baby Moses. Are you kidding me, Sunday school teachers? You have spent so much time focusing all of your efforts on converting new followers to Christ or distributing coupons for chicken sandwiches at God-fearing businesses that I think you forgot to teach my kids some of the key players, namely the key player. Gomer, that isn't Baby Moses, I said. Sure it is, Gomer insisted. Moses was the baby in the basket. This is a basket. He held up the manger. Yes, Moses was a baby in a basket, but that's not a basket. That's a manger, I said, waiting for the light bulb to pop on over his head. I got nothing from him. What's a manger, he asked. I don't know. Like a trough. A what? A thing used to feed animals, only they put baby Jesus in there like a crib. Away in a manger, I sang, thinking surely that would jog his memory. Why would they put a baby where animals eat? Gomer asked. Remember, there was no room at the inn, so Mary and Joseph went to the stable, and Mary gave birth there. That doesn't sound like a good place for a baby at all. She should have been at a hospital. Gomer, this was biblical times. There were no hospitals. Really? Where were the babies born then? Ugh, I did not want to get into this conversation right now. Listen, it doesn't matter where the other babies were born. Jesus was born in a stable, and he slept in a manger. Gomer looked at me and shrugged. Well, this isn't a manger. This is a basket. Moses was a baby in a basket. I tried one more time. Gomer, what holiday is coming up? What are we decorating for? Christmas, he answered quickly. Right. And what is Christmas about? I asked. Presents, yelled Adolpha from her closet. No, I said, shaking my head. No, we celebrate a birthday. Whose birthday are we celebrating? He was born in a stable a long time ago. Grandpa? Adolpha asked. No, what is wrong with you two? Mary was his mother and Joseph was his father. Gomer looked at me with a blank expression. Gomer, I tried again. The very first Christmas was the birth of our Savior. He is also known as... He looked at the doll in his hand. I gave up. It's baby Jesus, Gomer.
Who?
Gomer asked. Baby Jesus.
Wait, Jesus was there at the first Christmas? Gomer asked.
Yes, he was. Of course he was. He was the baby. We celebrate his birth at Christmas. Come on, you know that, right?
Oh, Gomer said, finally understanding. Whoops, I just always thought this was baby Moses, he said, looking at the baby in his hand.
Adolpha emerged from her closet with her nativity clutched in her hands. Hey, look, I found my Jesus, she said, holding up Joseph. I need to speak with their Sunday school teachers.
Jen Mann, reading from her book, Spending the Holidays with People I Want to Punch in the Throat, Yuletide Yahoos, Ho-Ho Humbraggers, and Other Seasonal Scourges. And that particular essay is called Wait, Who is the Reason for the Season? And this is New Letters on the Air. So when you're working on your blog, Do you just come up with an idea overnight about what you want to write about? Or tell me a bit about your process.
Well, when I first started, I was doing it overnight because I had two young kids at home. One was only in like half day kindergarten, you know, so they were home for part of the day with me. I was still trying to sell real estate full time. And so in those days, I sort of wrote whatever the funny story was that happened that day. You know, kids are just kind of funny. And I had someone ask me one time if I write funny stories or if funny things just happen to me. And I think what it is I can make a story funny. I'm one of those people who, you know, it might have been horrible at the time, but it can be funny now looking back on it and that sort of thing. And so I would just sort of keep an eye out for things that they might have done or said that I could make funny. And that was great when they were little. They gave me tons of fodder when they were little. And then as they got older, it was a little bit harder to come up with stuff. And so then I started telling more stories from my childhood or stories about me or my husband and about our past. And that was sort of where the Competitive Crafters book came from, was there's a lot of how we met and how we started dating, you know, just sort of different things like that. And about 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I guess it was, once everybody was in school full day and I had kind of my days to myself, I had more of like a writing agenda that I would work on, and especially once I had books in mind. And so now I mostly work on books. I don't blog near as often as I did. I wrote 5 days a week originally on the blog, and so now I have over, I think, 600 posts or something on my blog, and I tend to recycle those. I'm always gaining new people, and it's sort of like watching reruns of Seinfeld or Friends. You don't mind watching it again because it still makes you laugh. And so I kind of recycle those, and I try to add a few new ones. But for the most part, now I mostly just work on books, or I put out anthologies and I put out short stories and things like that where I can have people purchase the books or purchase the stories, because the blog really doesn't make you enough money to sort of keep it as a career. And so if I want to be a writer as a career, I'm going to have to publish more often. And so I time block is what I do, because the other part of it is social media. Social media is the other half of the full-time job, because without the platform, I can't sell my books. And so I'm constantly keeping that platform going. So even though I'm not blogging, I'm still entertaining them online. I'm still telling funny little quips or sharing funny things and just interacting with my readers, just having fun with them and getting to know them better. And, you know, they're like my friends. We all sit around in our pajamas all day and make each other laugh. So,
which is a wonderful thing.
Yeah.
So what book are you working on right now?
I have like three I'm working on right now. Instead of just focusing on one, I'm more of a pantser than a plotter. So it sort of depends on my mood that day, what I want to write. About a year and a half ago, I decided that fiction is really the direction I should go in, because how many true funny stories does a person have? You know, I have two more People I Want to Punch in the Throat books plotted out, and I work on that. The next one will be about like jobs I've ever had, you know, sharing a cubicle with people I want to punch in the throat or something like that. I don't have a title for it yet, but I've had numerous ridiculous, silly jobs. And so I've got a whole list of stories I want to tell about the jobs I've had.
Yeah,
and,
because I read that you were a political writer.
Yes.
Who did you write for?
Well, I can't say his name. Oh. But yeah, he was a former cabinet member, and so I used to ghostwrite for him quite a bit.
And okay, and then you worked at Condé Nast.
I did that.
Were you a proofreader? Or
no, that one was also a terribly boring job in a really exciting, interesting place. I followed up on copyrights and made sure that copyrights were still in place, which is important to them, but it was boring to me. I worked in a basement and didn't get to go out much, and so that was kind of, but I got lots of free magazines and lipstick. So. And so it's like things like that. I have all these like weird things I've done for different companies and different careers I've had and different paths I've taken. So I have a whole book of that, and I've been working on that and getting those stories together. But then on the fiction side, my kids are now 10 and 12, and they're not allowed to read what I write. And they don't read my People I Want to Punch in the Throat stuff, because believe it or not, I'm a super duper cusser on the blog and in person if children are not.
And in the books.
And in the books. And, you know, and in person. But I really don't cuss in front of my kids, and they don't let them cuss. And my son's in middle school now, and I realize I've kind of done him a disservice, because now he just about, like, keels over every time, like, one of his classmates, you know, drops an F-bomb, and he's just like, oh, my God, they said it. And I'm like, babe, you're going to hear so much worse. Like, you know, just go ahead and get that out of your system. And so my kids asked me to write a book that they could read. They like to read funny books, but they read a lot of graphic novels, which is not what I write. I cannot draw to save my life. But I started thinking about just funny stories I could tell from the perspective of a
middle grader or high schooler. So I've got that. And that one's pretty much done. I'm just finishing it up before I send it off to the editor.
Have they already bought it?
No, they haven't bought it yet. So we'll see what they think.
Yeah.
And because I come from self-publishing, I'm kind of at the point where if they don't like it, I'm just going to self-publish it. Either way, within a year, it'll be out.
Yeah.
You know? Either they'll put it out or I'll put it out.
And then they'll probably watch it because I think your first book, it went to the top of Amazon,
I read. Yeah.
And so that's what made them pick it up.
It is.
Random House pick it up and want to publish it.
Yeah. I'm kind of hard to classify. Like, they're not quite sure what to do with me. And,
yeah, it's not really chick lit.
It's like narrative nonfiction, which there's not a lot of shelf space for that.
Right.
And so that's why I feel like fiction, too, there's just a lot more opportunity for me in fiction, and I can tell better stories because I don't have to worry about sticking to the truth anymore if I tell fiction stories. So we'll see what they think of that. And if they don't like it, I will publish it myself and put it out. And I really like dystopian, and I'm very, I don't know, I feel like with our incoming president-elect, I think dystopian's going to be hot again. So I'd had this dystopian idea that's been sitting around when everyone's like, oh, dystopian's dead. And I'm like, I don't know, might be back. And so that's my next thing, too, to work on is to finish it up. It's about 3/4 of the way done. And at first I thought maybe it was too dark. And now I've decided it's got to go darker.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And what's the working title of that?
I don't have one for that either. I'm really bad with titles. Titles are probably the hardest thing for me to come up with. And so I usually leave those until the very bitter end.
Well, I'm going to have you read one more passage, Fa-ra-ra-ra-ra, My Christmas Story. And it's about a Christmas tradition that is kind of cross-cultural. Your husband is Chinese descent.
He is.
So that's why I picked this out.
The Hubs' parents wanted to spend Christmas Day with us since I had to work the next day. I thought they would invite us over to their house for a turkey lunch, and then we'd play board games all afternoon in front of a toasty fire. I couldn't have been more wrong. Instead, they invited us out to a Chinese restaurant in Flushing, a predominantly Asian section of Queens. When the Hubs first told me the plan, I said, "Won't the restaurants be closed? It's Christmas Day." He looked at me like I was stupid. "It's Chinese food," he said, as if that simply explained how a restaurant would be open on Christmas Day, a national holiday. "Okay, what does that have to do with anything?" "All of Flushing will be open. It'll be packed." "On Christmas?" "Yes. But won't people be at home eating turkey?" "We never eat turkey. We're Chinese. We eat duck," the Hubs replied. "Or tofurkey." "So we're going to go to a Chinese restaurant on Christmas to eat Chinese food?" I reiterated. "Yes," the Hubs said, exasperated. "Will we have tofurkey?" I asked, not quite sure what that was exactly. "No." "Will we have duck?" "I don't know. Maybe. It's kind of expensive. My parents won't want to spring for one if you guys won't eat it." "So we're going to go to a Chinese restaurant on Christmas night to have duck and other kinds of Chinese food for Christmas dinner?" I said. "Why is it so hard for you to understand? This is what my family does every year." "How did I not know this?" I asked. "I don't know. Probably because you never pay attention to me. Anyway, what does it matter?" "It just seems strange to me. I am white, you know. I've never had Chinese food for Christmas dinner." "It's funny, though. It's like that movie," I said. "What movie?" he asked. "That movie I love, A Christmas Story. The one with the kid who wants a BB gun and everyone says, 'You'll shoot your eye out,' and stuff." "I don't know that movie," he replied. "Of course you do," I reminded him. "The kid is Ralphie and he has glasses and the dogs eat the turkey, so they have to go out for Chinese food on Christmas night." "Never seen it," said the Hubs, more than a little perturbed with me by now. "Stop saying that I know it, because I don't." "What? Holy crap! It was like I was engaged to a man I barely knew. How, after all these years of dating, had I not known that he went to Flushing on Christmas night to eat Chinese food? And how did he not know the famous A Christmas Story movie?" I was scared. What else didn't I know?
That's more of a snippet from Spending the Holidays with People I Want to Punch in the Throat by Jen Mann. And this is New Letters on the Air. So tell me about your husband, because I know that he's Chinese-American. Both his parents or just one of them?
Both of his parents are Chinese. They immigrated here when he was 7.
Oh, my gosh. So he was actually born in China.
Well, in Taiwan.
In Taiwan. Uh-huh. Okay.
They lived in Taiwan in those days. And they came here when he was 7 to New York City and became citizens and...
you know, everyone always asks me if he has an accent. He sounds more like a New Yorker than anything else, you know, but he loves pizza and Chinese food. And, you know, he's very much a child of, like, the American salad bowl, where he has all these influences that hit him at such a young age that he can kind of blend into all different kinds of worlds. And so it's interesting to hear him because he is fluent in Chinese. And he works with a lot of Chinese clients here in Kansas City, and he talked to his parents and stuff like that. And I don't speak Chinese at all. And so to hear him kind of do that and then come back to us and blend in with what we're doing. So he's kind of a chameleon.
That's but great.
He's very cheap and funny, though. So so I like that about him.
And he apparently has a great sense of humor.
He really does. You know, it's funny. He will let me throw him under the bus. All he cares about is it's a funny story. He's like, you're going to throw me under the bus, at least make it funny. If it's not funny, then it's not worth it. But otherwise, he's got a great sense of humor. I mean, one of the things I do also is I put out anthologies every year that I bring together a bunch of women and we all contribute one story. And we have kind of like this overarching theme.
And I'm curious, are these other bloggers or are they writers of all different kinds?
They're all bloggers. It's sort of the world I live in as bloggers. You know, it's very interesting because when you're a blogger, a lot of authors don't consider you to be an author. So you kind of are stuck in this world. You know, I'd love to invite more authors and know more authors, but it's just there's kind of that division. So I hang out with a lot of bloggers online and I'm still friends with a lot of bloggers. And I invite them every year to come and do these anthologies with me. And I have these overarching themes. And I tried to do one about husbands a few years ago. And it was his idea. He's just like, you guys should all tell funny husband stories. And it was hard to find enough women who had husbands who were willing to let them tell the story. You know, they're just like, I have a great story, but I got to talk to him first and see if he'll let me tell it. And then it was, no, he says no. So it made me appreciate mine even more.
Yeah. Well, I love the fact that you guys agreed early on that real names would not be used and he would just be the Hubs.
Yeah.
Or Ebenezer. Right?
Ebenezer Scrooge, because he's a little bit of a Scrooge. But yeah, you know, and that was kind of his idea because, you know, I had some interest from the AP for one. Like they wanted to write some stories after I went viral. And because I wouldn't release our names and my kids' names and where we live, they wouldn't write about us. And at first I was sort of like, man, this publicity would be great though and it could get us some attention. And he was just like, it's not worth it in the long run, Jen. And I think he was absolutely right. I'm glad he did kind of hold firm.
Oh gosh, he was very wise about that.
He is. It's a good thing.
Your husband studied filmmaking in college. One day are you going to give him room to do his thing?
He went to NYU Film School. And when I met him, we were both just out of college, and so he'd already done his student film, and he'd already kind of been through that, and he went into business at that point. He was just sort of like, oh, you know, film is really hard to break into, and it's expensive, because in those days, you know, there weren't digital cameras like there are now, and all that kind of thing, so it was really hard for him. So he actually went into business, and, you know, one of the things we've worked on together is we've written a pilot for People I Want to Punch in the Throat, a television pilot. And we've written a treatment for 13 episodes. And it's actually out right now in Hollywood being passed around to see. And so that's kind of the idea that we have to work on together, that we'd love to be like producers on that together. And he helped me write the script for it because I'd never written a script before. And so that's sort of where our interests blend.
Well, Jen, thank you so much. And I wish you a lot of luck in what you're doing. I mean, I love the way you have approached your writing life and the direction you're going with it. And I can't wait to see what your fiction turns out.
Thank you so much. Well, thanks for having me. This was a lot of fun.
Jen Mann. She read from her book, Spending the Holidays with People I Want to Punch in the Throat, Yuletide Yahoos, Ho-Ho Humbraggers, and Other Seasonal Scourges. She also narrates her books from Valentine, a Random House imprint. In 2017, she released 3 new books, including a young adult novel with Throat Punch Media. For links, visit newletters.org. Follow us on Facebook, Tumblr, and Twitter at New Letters Radio. New Letters on the Air is a production of New Letters Magazine at UMKC. Today's show is produced with Cedric Hurt and Jamie Walsh. I'm Angela Elam for this holiday edition of New Letters on the Air.